Is it fish first?
Fish, yeah. Family, freedom. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fish.
So not freedom. Not America first, not family first. Fish first.
Fish
yeah,
first.
Yeah, which in Alaska that plays.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Next Level. I'm JVL here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. And it has been another terrible stretch of a week or two. I was thinking about that halcyon moment right between like December 22nd and January 3rd, where some people, I don't want to name names, were like, oh, we got him. He's on the ropes. The end of Trumpism is coming.
I've been getting this feedback from people. And just let me say, for starters, like, am I allowed to have one happy podcast? Am I allowed to have one happy podcast in this fucking godforsaken world? Or does it get held over my... So that's number one. And number two is all the things that were true in December about Trump's political problems remain true. Today,
remain true.
January 13th. There's been now a refocus on his authoritarian aspirations, which are related to but separate from his political prospects. Mm-hmm. Because I think there's some elements of the authoritarian effort that are less likely if he's looking weaker and weaker politically. These things can exist. We live in a complex world, you know, and so I don't know. In the same week of podcasts where we were talking about how weak Trump was, which is great, we also did our New Year's predictions, mm-hmm. where we all were like, Donald Trump, we're like, a cornered Donald Trump is going to try to grab onto power, and an 81-year-old mentally declining man who knows what he could do. And so I think that all of these things exist together in our horrible reality, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, look, everything we are going to talk about today, whether it is Minnesota, whether it's the Fed, I can't remember what the other topics are.
The new tramp stamp on the White House.
Yeah, sure.
Venezuela. I'm the captain Greenland. Now.
Venezuela. Every single one of them is, it's the same story. It is true that I've also had maybe a more bleak, the Minnesota thing has been more bleak for me than lots of other political news. And it is as close as I have come to sort of JVL's, one of his most negative outlooks, which is that Americans, if not outright want authoritarianism, are not, certainly aren't hostile to it. And I will say, I don't agree with that always like broadly, certainly MAGA Republicans, but the extent to which people are willing to be gaslit against the things they see with their own eyes and being willing to sort of say, yeah, they have all the power. You cannot contradict something an ICE agent says. You cannot push back. Protest is domestic terrorism. This is, we have, it's not that it's a tipping point exactly, but I would say in totality, when you put this story together, this is as Trump at his most authoritarian is. Is authoritarianistic a word? It is most authoritarian. Yeah. And I've been pretty despondent at, because to Tim's point, like the political realities are still there. Like I'm doing focus groups. People are not happy about a lot of the things they are seeing. They are not happy about ICE. Like there is frustration. It's just not, it is not proportional to what he is doing. It's Greenland. It's Venezuela. It's saber-rattling at Cuba. All of it is Trump with a might makes right, unlimited force. No one can check me. No one can say boo to my like new paramilitary soldiers that I'm putting in the field. It is the most scared that I've been in terms of we are starting to move into the place where Trump is the does recognize the political realities, does feel cornered, and is behaving like it.
Well, it's also the lesbian murder. And just so the people don't care about her life. And I think that's okay. Maybe that's wrong. I mean, I'm projecting that onto you. But I always said that about the Andre situation with me. And I don't you know, I'm not the biggest identity politics person, but there's some elements of identity politics that touch on something real, which is that, like, you just have, I have a natural, more emotional reaction if it's, you know, a little gay or somebody from my neighborhood or whatever, you know what I mean? Then you do. That's just human nature. And just the way with which, like, people have not only had no empathy for Renee Good, but have castigated her and that she's
hate been, her.
They hate her and they hate her girlfriend or partner, whatever it was, yeah. Especially. And the language that is used about her is just despicable.
Well, if we're going to talk about the specifics of Minneapolis, I will say this has been now litigated pretty thoroughly in terms of people have taken their sides and people, you know that this police officer was circling her vehicle while Renee Good said to him, like, it's okay, bro. I'm not mad at you. Like, we're fine. While her wife was being quite mouthy and like kind of doing, and like that scenario, part of it is like, it just rang so familiar to me of like that, woman,
you know, some lesbian couples like that.
I've seen that.
How does that work in your? How does that work in your household? Does that stereotype work in your household?
It doesn't quite work exactly in my. but listen, as a mouthy lesbian myself, I will say that the like way in which this administration actively works to other her and its mouthpieces, right? Matt Walsh and everybody else. The goal is to say, yeah, she's not really just a regular American guy. She's not really just one of you. She's a lesbian, and therefore coded left, and therefore a domestic terrorist. Like the way in which domestic terrorist kind of rolls off their tongue as somebody who was protesting and somebody who was objecting that is domestic terrorism, and then they're going to investigate. They're going to investigate who's paying for this, meaning anybody who funds anything that is seen as progressive or of the left is participating in domestic terrorism, which means everything is a pretext. It's the same way where they're talking about like, you know, okay, Maduro, they went and grabbed him. Okay. But like now they're like, but Greenland and Cuba and wherever it's all like, we're going to figure out a pretext later. Like they're so glad it was a lesbian that was doing it. Cause they're like, that's our in. That's the DEI woke Marxist lesbians. They're not real Americans. They're the people that we can investigate. They're the people whose lives matter less. They're the ones that you hate. And I don't know, Tim, I don't know that I felt it. It felt like it did feel like a little bit more familiar in some way, I guess, because she's a lesbian. But it would be the same thing if the person had been black. It would have been the same thing if it had been anybody who is who doesn't look exactly like the posters that they put up about finding new American workers, you know, just like this white dude.
I think we aren't being dark enough.
I can go darker right now.
The behavior of DHS following this has not, I mean, forget being chastened. They haven't even been professional. Like there has been no, this was a real outlier case. And as we do in all officer shootings, we have an ongoing investigation into it. We're not going to comment on this or none of that. It's been pure. Yeah, that's right. She got what was coming to her. We haven't seen the ICE agents on the street saying that. There was a video of them, you know, kicking over candles at her memorial, and which is again like we saw when they were in D.C. tearing down, you know, like signs in public they didn't like, saying to another protester, you know, hey, you saw what happened, right? This is, and we don't
seen
have
a couple
the
videos
full
like
ICE
that
force
of separate ICE guys saying to other protesters, like, you saw what happened to that other woman, like using it as a threat.
They're still staffing up. They're still bringing
people. And sending
people
to Minnesota.
Board,
here
right?
in
they're
New Orleans,
another
they're sending
thousand
our people.
Yeah. Right. Another thousand. I was really struck by your interview with the Minneapolis mayor, Tim, when he talked. And I thought when he said, you know, we're so outnumbered. And I thought, oh, that can't be right. I went and listened to him. They have 600 police officers in Minneapolis. And that's against 2,400 ICE agents now. And Kristi Noem said that they're going to send an additional 1,000. So outnumbered 6-1.
Yeah. And you know what?
I mean, that is an invasion.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to.
They're being adversarial, yeah, too. It's not like they're coming in to de-escalate. They're going in to escalate, and they're not working with the police officers on.
No.
So I was just doing the illegal news with Asha Rangappa, who was an FBI agent, and she was talking about the fact that, like, when there's a shooting like this, the ICE officers aren't allowed to flee the scene. Like, the gun immediately should go to ballistics. You work with the officials on the ground. Like, the FBI doesn't do it. Like, this is what happened when you had the shooting of Charlie Kirk, right? If the FBI had been in charge of it, nothing would have happened, right? It took the local officials there on the ground to do the work because Kash Patel was completely out to lunch. But, like, they are going to whitewash and cover up this whole thing. They're not going to do an investigation.
Oh, well, they actually are going to do an investigation. I don't know if you've seen the breaking news that just hit since we've been on here. We can do this live. Six federal prosecutors in Minnesota resigned today over the Justice Department's push to investigate. Guess who? You want to guess?
Jerome Powell.
Nope. Her widow. The mouthy lesbian.
They're going to investigate her?
Well, they're trying to. There was a federal Justice Department push to investigate the woman, the partner of Renee Good. And six prosecutors have already resigned. Good on them. In Minnesota today over that various question. So they're doing an investigation, just not of the murderer, just not of the guy that shot her three times in the face.
Right.
Yeah, they're going to take the victim's family and look into her and make her life even more miserable while she mourns, while they deal with what to do with their six-year-old who's an orphan now because her husband from a previous marriage has also died. It's just fucking sick what these people are doing.
Can I ask an accelerationist question? I'm not advocating this.
Well, they're accelerationist, I should just say. That's what me and Bill are talking about yesterday. Questions. That's what they're doing.
No, I know. So when you interviewed Jacob Fry, you asked him, like, is there anything the Minneapolis police can do? And his answer was unbelievably revealing and kind of chilling. And he said, no one is allowed to break the law. So in theory, we could arrest them if we saw them breaking the law by brutalizing people. But the reality is we're outmanned and outgunned, and we couldn't, because it would start, it'd be like the OK Corral and they'd kill us because there are so many of them.
Can I say this about Mayor Fry? I thought that was a super interesting answer. I'm glad you brought that up, because I asked the question because I didn't want to be the person that was the accelerationist. So it wasn't maybe as precise of a question as I could have asked, which was like, do you think that, can your cops arrest the ICE agents? Like, would have been the precise question. And do you think that they should? And I asked it in more of a kind of roundabout way. And he starts by giving a politician-y generalized answer to that question and then stops in the middle of it. He goes, but I think what you're asking is, can we arrest their agents or not?
Yeah.
And then would give a very blunt answer, which is what you just laid out. And then kind of, I should just say, at the end of that, he's like, but we are still, like, it's not practical to think that we could do that, but like, we're not ruling anything out. Basically, I don't have the quote in front of me, but I thought that was super telling.
Yeah. Should the governor activate the National Guard and send them into Minneapolis to keep the people of Minneapolis safe?
No.
Well, Sarah, the current governor is a lame duck, so.
Why not?
Because they're all operating under Donald Trump, under his orders right now.
Well, the state National Guard would be under control of the governor unless the president then went on top of him and said, I'm taking charge of it. So it would force
which is what he would do.
So if we're being accelerationists here, we should
I'm not.
I know. I'm just asking questions. Just asking questions, Sarah. I'm not advocating this position. I'm just asking if
I don't know. You're being a little cheeky. I don't think any of this is crazy. I think that people, and what I've heard from friends and listeners on the ground in Minneapolis is that, like, it's as bad as it seems. It's worse than it seems, right? Like, sometimes it's hard on the outside to, like, get a grasp on, okay, I've seen these three viral videos of these guys acting insane. And that's not to excuse those three, but is that, you know what I mean? Do I have a full grasp on what's happening? And my understanding is that, like people are very chilled. People are being asked to, they're going into daycares, they're going into the Targets. Like people, these are this neighborhood that Renee Good got killed in is just like, we can all just look at it and it's a whatever middle upper middle class neighborhood. It's like 30 blocks outside of downtown Minneapolis. Like it's not, you know, some it's not some gang hood, you know. And so I don't think that it's and they've killed a woman and they're harassing citizens. I'm not saying for this either, but I'm like, it's not crazy to think like, I don't know, maybe the prosecutor in Hennepin County should be prosecuting Ross. Maybe the governor and mayor should be thinking about how to protect people. I don't know. That's not crazy.
Well, it's not crazy to be thinking about protecting people. I guess the question is whether the National Guard, the reason that JVL is categorizing it as accelerationist is because I think the obvious rejoinder or the outcome of that is an escalation of tensions right now. Yes. What the state National Guard, what is going to do battle with ICE and the federal National Guard, like you are talking about flooding a space with American soldiers and law and quasi law enforcement, and then setting them up in opposition to one another, which I'm not there on the ground. I can't make these types of decisions, but I don't know if I were there, I would think that was the best thing for the citizens. I'm not sure it's not, but I'm not.
I
sure
agree with you. Yeah. That's what my point was. That I'm not sure it's not.
I'm with you guys.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure it's not as crazy enough, right? Like that you're in this situation, and especially as more people are coming in and descending on the city, and maybe there's a less escalatory, like, okay, well, I'm not trying to, you know, create some sort of constitutional crisis over who controls the Minnesota National Guard, but I don't know, there's certain communities that need police protection, right? Like just one example is this coming to mind. I don't know, because I don't know enough about like where the high density of Somali community, you know, is in Minneapolis. But just like one example is that video, the Uber driver that I did a take on yesterday. He's like basically in Minneapolis, like most of the Uber drivers are Somali, not all of them, but like a huge percentage, right? And so, you know, there is like a parking lot at the airport where Uber drivers sit and wait for people to call their Uber when they land. And Bovino and his thugs like went and like raided the parking lot and started asking the drivers for like their proof of citizenship. I don't know. Are there communities like that like you should just say, okay, hey, we're going to put a cop, you know, we're going to post some, I don't know, lawyers there or cops there. I don't know. I mean, like all of this stuff is stuff they at least have to be having meetings about.
It's something else. This episode of The Next Level is brought to you by Wild Grain. Wild Grain is the first bake from frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, artisanal pastries, and fresh pastas. Plus all items conveniently bake in 25 minutes or less. Unlike many store-bought options, Wild Grain uses simple ingredients you can pronounce and a slow fermentation process that can be easier on your belly and richer nutrients and antioxidants. There's no preservatives and no shortcuts. Wild Grain's boxes are fully customizable. In addition to their new variety box, they have a gluten-free box, a vegan box, and a new protein box. Life can get chaotic. The past 2 weeks, the news has been moving a mile a minute. We've been cranking out podcasts and takes and newsletters, and it's brought me so much peace of mind knowing that I can count on a delicious, easy-to-prep protein box when I need it most. And I have to tell you, this thing, Wild Grain, absolutely killed it in my house. My family has never been so excited about any box we've ever gotten. The chocolate croissants, unbelievable. The sourdough breads, unbelievable. The cookies. They do cookies too. I'm just telling you, all of my kids went nuts. We are actually going to be starting our own subscription because they love it so much. It'd be great if Wild Grain wanted to comp me for that, but otherwise I'm just going to pay out of pocket. There's nothing like having an artisanal bakery in your freezer to chase away the winter chill. Now is the best time to stay in and enjoy comforting homemade meals with Wild Grain. Highly recommend giving Wild Grain a try. Right now, Wild Grain is offering our listeners $30 off your first box plus free croissants for life when you go to wildgrain.com/thenextlevel to start your subscription today. That's $30 off your first box and free croissants for life when you visit wildgrain.com/thenextlevel, or you can use the promo code thenextlevel at checkout.
Artisanal?
Artisanal.
Artisanal, I think.
Maybe to but you.
You're not an artisanal eater. You know, you're a man of the people. I think that's a good.
That's why I like a product that'll give me free croissants for life, because I'm a man of the people. Can we just do a 2 seconds on J.D. Vance? Did you think he would go this far? I did. I'm not surprised.
Yeah. I'm not surprised.
But are you guys surprised? Not surprised either.
No, he is the living worst.
J.D. will be on board for. I mean, if Trump tries to steal the next one, he'll be
100%.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's nothing. JD's on board for whatever.
I think that JD is absolutely down for whatever.
Yeah.
And that he's full white replacement, full all of it. Mm. No?
Full white nationalism. Mostly, yeah. You know, remember, I used to have this argument with people a lot where they would be like, Ron DeSantis is worse than Trump, you know? And I would be like, no, I'm not. No. Trump is in his own category of things that he is doing. His influence over J.D. Vance, like J.D. Vance's ability to both study at his feet and then say, I know how to go further than this. I know how to message this. I know how to be the attack dog on this. I have no sense of morality or no sense of my own internal, you know, locus of decency. Like, I am full on, will take what this guy is doing and I'll take shave 40 years off of it. It's not even worth getting into like worse or better. I just think that there is not now, we can look and see right in front of us that J.D. Vance is an extension of everything that is wrong and evil about Trump and has 40 more years on him.
I just say, look, think about that press conference. And we've already done all the commentary about the actual substance of what he said. But the fact that he was like, put his hand up, right? You know what I mean? It's like, this woman was clearly not a threat to anybody. Mm-hmm. Gets gunned down in the street by agents of the state. And as you wrote well in your newsletter, JVL, there are a lot of ways that you could handle that. That might not be how we would want it, but that would have at least been professional. And they decided to not do that, to lie about her, to defame her, to run her through the mud, now apparently to investigate her family. And JD was like, yeah, like, put me in, coach. I want to go out there and be the face of the effort to defame this woman and to run her name through the mud.
And to lie to people.
And to lie to people, yeah. Because he didn't have to do that. I mean, I don't know. How many times has he been behind that podium? A couple. You know, it's not like weekly. It's not like it just happened to fall on weekly Wednesdays with JD. You know, like, he put his hand up and was like, I want to go put on this show, because he's a sociopath.
Well, I think also because this is how he heads off a primary challenge.
Yeah, right?
If there's nobody who can get to his right on anything, because that was always the danger for him, I think, was that some populist demagogue from sort of outside the administration could come in and say, Trump never went far enough. And JD has, I think, closed that off. I don't think there's any room for anybody to run to his right. Is that wrong?
I think you're getting there, especially if, I would say right now, his main competition would be Rubio. Right. It's sort of like his main ally in the administration is Rubio. And Trump puts them together like on a ticket right now as a potent ticket. And you can see, watch. It is already happening in the press, but you're going to see more of this where there's going to be a nudge of, but what about Rubio? How did Rubio become this guy? How did he go from little Marco to Trump's attack dog? But here's where J.D. Vance, this is why he puts his hand up. Marco Rubio is doing all this. He's getting a strange new respect from MAGA for the things he's doing because he's being such a loyalist to Trump, but he's doing the unpopular stuff. He's doing the Venezuela. Yep. He's doing the stuff that's counter to America First.
Iran.
Whereas J.D. Vance is like, go give me the domestic stuff. Give me the stuff that the America Firsters care about, which is our paramilitary force, you know, going after the lesbians. It's funny. I ask about J.D. Vance, you know, in a lot of the focus groups. And do you know what the one thing everybody knows about J.D. Vance is?
The couch.
It's the childish cat ladies. Really? It's like he, his hostility to women, and this is one of the things that I think is interesting as we move forward with J.D. Vance's future, is women in particular don't warm to him. And that childless cat ladies thing, just, it's stuck. It's stuck in ways that lots of other things don't.
I just want to throw one little small caveat about this, which is that kind of somewhat silly story, because nobody really thinks that Steve Bannon's going to be the president, but the idea that Bannon's thinking about running in 2028 to help control the narrative, basically, to help kind of define the policy, the contours of the policy debate. And I think the one way where JD could end up finding himself with issues to the right of him would be if we go back to the halcyon days of December 26th and like think about like how the Trump, like if the Trump political project really collapses, and particularly economically, I do think, I don't know who the person is to carry this because it's not Bannon, but you know, kind of a Bannon Hawley-ism that's like, these guys got so focused on what was happening in other places and, you know, we need to take care of our people. You know, wink. I think he's slightly vulnerable to that. And he doesn't have control over that, though, because he's just the vice president. And if Trump goes crazy and the economy tanks, like, it's not like the vice president can do anything to fix it. So I think that he's trying to control what he can control as far as to the right.
That hurts him in a general election. I don't think the economy tanking touches him at all in a Republican primary, because they don't care about that. They care about hurting the brown people.
Yeah, it depends on how out of touch he seems. I probably agree with you. I want to leave open the possibility that that they have.
It depends on who he's running against. Yeah, it depends on who he's running against too. Yeah. Because
nobody, right? I mean,
Bannon.
If you assume,
I'm sorry. I meant the Democrat. I meant the Democrat. Oh, he ends up running against.
Oh. I'm kind of excited for a Bannon Ted Cruz J.D. Vance debate. Hope we make it to that.
That'd help us. Trump is still going to be in office anyway. He's not leaving. Did Jerome Powell win? That was the other thing. So Tim's prediction for 2026 was worried about Venezuela. My big dark horse worry for 2026 was very concerned about what he's going to do with Fed and Fed independence. Who are the big winners? These guys.
Well, mine was that we were going to go into a Trump session, which I think
soon.
I'm going to come up late, but I think I'm going to get there.
You're going to get there.
Go ahead. Well, what's the question?
Did he win? So Jerome Powell did something extraordinary over the weekend. He released a videotaped statement in which he just called things by right names. There was no there's no pussyfooting around. There was no, we have to respect the process, whatever. He was just like, this is gangsterism. This guy is doing this because he's trying to take over the Fed. This is bullshit. We out. And I don't know, he got a couple of Republicans in Congress coming up on his side because of it. He was super butch for him.
Okay. It's the economists who are going to save us. God help us. I want to say when I watched it, I walked around showing it to other people. I was like, look at what Jerome Powell
totally
did.
Normal.
Because that totally thing normal. Was.
I was with you, because I was seeing a lot of praise on social media. Then I watched, the first 45 seconds he does do some throat clearing, and then finally around the 1 minute mark, I was like, "Whoa, Jerome, girl, go, yeah."
He's literally actually doing throat clearing. Like, this is not a guy who does straight to camera. You can hear the mic is so tight, and you can hear him kind of swallowing hard as he's getting ready to drop this. But I want a diagram. What Jerome Powell did just a little bit, because sometimes people are like, Sarah, what do you mean offense? Or what would you do? How would you do it? And I want to say, this is how it's done in the big kid world. Like, this is NFL caliber comms. Here's what he did. He went straight to camera. He dropped it on his official account. He called Republicans in advance and said, here's what he is doing. I need you to be with me. He knew he had backup. He demanded that they back him up. He advocated for himself. And then he went on and in a no frills, no frothing at the mouth, but did clearly and with conviction state that it was pretextual, that Trump was trying to bully him, that Trump was making things up, that he had been clear about how he'd communicated with Congress. And I thought it was a masterclass in how things should be done. When I'm saying to people, like, go on offense, do things, it's like, don't just wait. Don't just sit back and let Trump do things to you. Go out and make your case. Do it seriously. Do it soberly. And I think he looks like the serious one there. And he is one of the first people, when he made that appeal, Republicans were like, yeah, we're going to have his back.
And he does it like 24 hours after the news breaks that the administration's coming for him. Like, didn't wait.
Yeah.
You know, didn't like wait. They didn't even let a single news cycle get through because it happened on a weekend. So like, you're 12 hours into the news cycle and he's like, here's the response.
Whatever crisis comms firm he has on retainer is like, they were ready for it. He was ready to go.
I mean, he's winning. He asked if he won. You know, who knows? But yeah. His term ends in May.
May. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and so we really are like staring down the barrel of another, like, that's going to be a crisis point, right? When Trump decides who to replace him with. Like, is Trump going to, like, there are ways for Trump to probably go around the crisis. Like, I don't have a ton of faith in old Tom Tillis, you know, to be Mr. Backbone here. And so, you know, you do think that could Susie or whoever's in charge of this call Tillis and say, would you be for Warsh? You know, would you be for, right? And like, could they find an acceptable Kevin to put in there? You know, I do think that like Trump has the clock on his behalf. And if he doesn't act totally insane and just puts up just a plausibly acceptable nominee, my guess is that the Republican Senate will cower again, because that's what they keep doing. So at some level, like, well, does that mean Trump will have won the long game? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what your definition is of winning or losing, but certainly power won the short term.
It also depends on what one means, but like, he's doing the right thing. Like, correct. This is, yeah. he's setting up a way for, like, this is how responsible people respond in the face of this kind of thuggish behavior.
Do you think Tom Tillis voted for Trump? I was asking that of myself while we were watching reading his statement and him, you know, with his like, ah, you know, I can't believe this corruption of the Justice Department. And obviously, he knows this never would have happened under the Harris administration.
Yes. Tom Tillis voted for Trump. Yes. This is like the Melania discussion for me. I hate it when people are like, in private, Melania and Usha are really upset. It's like, yeah. Tom Tillis's public behavior is his public behavior. And if he did, fuck him. If he like put in the booth, he closed the window and he writes in Jack Kemp or whatever, fuck you. I mean, he voted for Trump for all intents and purposes.
That's true. There's not actually a good answer to this question. Yeah. If he voted for Kamala, it's not okay. Because he still then knows how bad Trump is, was willing to vote for the Democrat, but publicly, you know, covers for Trump.
Sarah, it's not how bad Trump is. It's how bad Trump's advisors are.
Mm. Yeah, remember. Tillis said
in his statement, see, he's just getting bad advice.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm not the least bit impressed with Murkowski or any of the people who are coming out in favor of this. Coming to Powell's defense. Like, the meager bar that we have for them, just because they clear it one out of every six times, I am not impressed. I'm more impressed with him in that what it signals to me is that he knew how to marshal the backup that he needed to be on his own footing. Like, Trump can't get me. Yeah.
Either of you, I'm not trying to make anybody be a commie, but either of you at all concerned that the market saw the president of the United States attempt to jail the head of the central bank and it just shrugged?
So I'm not surprised. But not in your commie way, more that I think the markets are pricing Taco in. Like, they this isn't going to happen. They saw the Murkowski thing. Like, they're like, Trump's not going to get him, or Trump can't get him. And that's why they reacted like that. They're probably comforted by this.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the market's basically fake. Sorry. This is, I don't know.
Tell me more.
At some point in some future date, I presume that reality will be forced upon the markets. But like, the market is a psychological exercise, right? And so you know, for a confluence of reasons, part of one of which being naivete, I do think that it's kind of outperforming what I think is rational, but I'm not an investment expert either. And, you know, we've seen this now over and over again at this point. There's nothing, if you just look at all of the other indicators about the economic strength right now, it's not matching what we're seeing in the markets. You know, but there's some, you know, I've seen some other more erudite explanations for this about kind of like where money flocks to, you know, in times of instability, and that might be explaining some of this. And so I don't know. I think that there's a combination of things at play, but I definitely think there's some naivete.
Okay. You guys excited to do regime change in Iran?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay.
Are you not?
Neocons plus one. Sarah, how about you? Are you still riding with us?
Tim, are you genuinely excited about regime change in Iran?
It depends. I mean, it was a cheeky question.
I thought we were joking a little bit. I thought we were joking.
I'm excited for. I hope the regime in Iran is deposed.
Yeah, and I hope
images
they fail.
Of the dead protesters, like thousands upon like 12,000, I guess, is the number right now. We
12,000 bodies right now.
Yeah, bodies. It's fucking disgusting. Despicable. I think that the Iranian regime is very weak. Obviously, they have leaks from the inside based on what we saw from Israel's actions. Obviously, there's interest in the Shah or whoever coming from the outside, from within the country. And I don't know. I think that it would be positive. I think that there's certain things that the U.S. could do that would be helpful, it seems like. I don't know that, like, bombing, you know, or, you know, what exactly does that look like? I don't know. But I'll leave that. I got Mark Kirtling on the Daily Pod tomorrow. We'll talk about that. He wrote for us today that bombing is the last step that we should take. But obviously, there are some other things we could do. We could have nice things in this world, right? The Iranian people could possibly have freedom. Is that not possible?
Yeah, and because when you say regime change, the question is like, are we going in exactly versus?
Well, could we help push? Right, it's a moment of instability, a moment of crisis for the Iranian regime. Could America
help
push?
Can I just say one of the things that is the most ironic about this is that one of Trump's stated reasons for us getting involved in Iran is the crackdown on the protesters.
Yeah.
Oh. Huh. Oh, does Trump respect protesters now?
Wait a minute. Hold on. Question. Should the Iranian police have to deal with disrespectful behavior from protesters in Iran? Isn't that asking a lot of them?
Maybe Trump has a threshold. You can be generous. Maybe police, one dead lesbian is okay, but 12,000.
Know, police, you got to show them respect. Look, if the Iranian policeman gives you an order, don't you have to comply? Otherwise, you'll be shot dead? Is that not how it works?
Look, I think that in
very
any,
confusing.
If America being on the side of the protesters in Iran makes sense, it is hard to separate. Like, I would not trust this administration to engage in large ways in any of these regime changes. One of the things that's interesting, though, is that I do think MAGA will tolerate Venezuela slightly differently than it would tolerate us doing something in Iran. And the reason is just like it's in the Middle East. And
Israel.
Like
because it would make Israel happy.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Something and it just reminds them happy? More directly of the Iraq and Afghanistan, Middle East wars, endless wars. Starting the year with a wardrobe refresh, Quince has you covered with luxe essentials that feel effortless and look polished. They're perfect for layering, mixing, and building a wardrobe that lasts. Their versatile styles make it easy to reach for them day after day. Quince has all the staples covered, from soft Mongolian cashmere sweaters that feel like designer pieces without the markup, to 100% silk tops and skirts for easy dressing up, to perfectly cut denim for everyday wear. Their wardrobe essentials are crafted to last season after season. And you all know how much I love things that are low effort and can be low effort for a long time to come. The quality shows in every detail. The stitching, the fit, the fabrics, every piece is thoughtfully designed to be your new wardrobe essential. And like everything from Quince, each piece is made with premium materials in ethical, trusted factories, then priced far below what other luxury brands charge. Here's the thing. You've heard me sing Quince's praises 100 times. And if you are really one of those people who thinks Sarah is always right, I am telling you, go get yourself one of their Italian wool coats or leather jackets so you could say, I'm wearing the Sarah Longwell. So we're...
I guess, if you wanted to do that.
They do. So refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Don't wait. Go to quince.com/thenextlevel for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That is quince.com/thenextlevel to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/thenextlevel.
How about Greenland? We're going to invade Greenland?
I mean, no.
The White House keeps going to a lot of trouble to say that it will not rule out the use of military force. It's a crazy thing. I have never seen a situation in which an administration tries to antagonize allies to the way that we have on this. It's wild. What do we make of it?
I had our friend Susan Glasser on today. You guys haven't heard it yet because it doesn't publish at the time we're taping. Wise, judicious New Yorker. Serious person, thinker. And I said to her, I was like, last week on the Next Level podcast, I posited that I think there's like a 1 in 3 chance we actually do this with Greenland. And I got some, you know, maybe a little, some big eyes from my co-panelists. And she was like, I think it's more.
Wow.
She's like, I think it's more. I don't think it's definite. But like Trump said, he has a psychological need for Greenland to the New York Times. Psychological need. That was his own words, to own it.
Well, he is talking. So this is, I will say, the difference between invading and purchasing, which is what he is talking about now. He's just
floating.
They're not going
to sell it, though.
No, nobody's floating. He's floating, giving like thousands of dollars directly to Greenlanders in exchange for them. Yeah.
Right. Paying them to vote. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, that is about the only way that he could do it, I think, is just mass bribery. The problem with that is you can't make them sign an enforceable contract. And so if you're a Greenlander, you could say, sure, I'll take $1 million from you or $10 million from you. And then you just don't vote that way. Sucker, right? You know, eat my shorts. What's Trump going to do about it? The other problem is, and I feel stupid even treating this like it's a real question, but purchasing Greenland is impossible because you can't price it. There is no way to price what it would cost. And because the United States is attempting a hostile takeover, Denmark could not accept anything except for an all cash offer, because they have no mechanism to enforce Donald Trump paying them. So for those two reasons, the reality that you can't put a price on what Greenland is actually worth, and that America would have to pay cash or some cash equivalent because Denmark can't trust them to pay on a payment plan, you're not going to be able to do it. You can't do it.
Yeah. Are you ready for this one? While we're doing just fun counterfactuals, here's what Susan dumped on me today. And I kind of sat here like this. So I wonder what you guys are going to, you're going to react. She said that there was a high ranking European source. And they're like, if Trump actually put boots on the ground in Greenland and put an American flag down in your Germany, and your calculus is either like totally blow up the US-EU relationship over Greenland, or just kind of let him have it, what are you going to do? And they're like, I think that if you're Germany, you let them have it.
I was also talking about this on my podcast with Asha Rangappa. And like, we've never done anything like this before where we just are saying, we're the biggest. We dare you to try and stop us.
Yeah.
Like, because like, they're a NATO ally. We're going to blow up NATO. And I don't mean to derail the conversation, but I want to talk about JVL's accelerationist theories, because I've been thinking about this a lot, because I don't like the idea of being an accelerationist. I don't like the idea of pushing us into places that are going to do a great deal of damage. But I was trying to think about what are my lines? How do I separate the places where I think I kind of want to see, like, I don't want the Supreme Court to rule against the tariffs because I want people to experience Donald Trump's economy as they wished for it, as they voted for it. Part of the reason is that that can be undone, right? Like that, if we go into a recession and people feel economic pain as a result of his choices, our economy can bounce back from that. We come back. Those are cyclical, and it is not the end of things. The accelerationism into America is now a place that marches into other countries because it is not.
We just need some Lebensraum, Sarah.
Well, we just want to take all of their resources, right? Like it's the Greenland and Venezuela are actually not different. There's just better pretexts for Venezuela, right? Like we will sit here and be like, Maduro being gone, net good. And so you can sort of, it's a little more opaque, but like Trump is being very clear. No, I want their oil.
He says that's he's why I'm in going charge.
In. We're big.
He says he's declared himself. President.
He's the acting president of Venezuela. I read some insane line in my notes and it was like, Trump announced he's the acting president of Venezuela on Truth Social. And you're like, what words just came out of my mouth? What am I even talking about? But that kind of accelerationism where America moves in a direction where we have broken our relationship with Europe, or we are blowing up NATO. We are just taking the land of people who are our purported allies. Like, you can't come back from those things. And so I am very much like, and this is where I say, hey, Lisa Murkowski, like the through line of all of these things is that Congress acting is the only remedy. Congress acting is the only remedy across all of these things. They could say right now, we control the power of the purse. You can't have any more ICE. You can't keep recruiting more ICE people if you're going to send them in America's cities and shoot.
You got to go level down, though, Sarah. The only remedy is Republican voters changing their mind, because it isn't enough for Republicans in Congress to act. They then have to be supported in 11 months by Republican voters.
Well, right? And if first Republican, of all, many
Republican
of them
voters
don't.
Want this. They want it.
That's not true. Republican voters never wanted Greenland.
I bet if you pulled it right now, they want it.
No.
80%
right.
of them, 80% Jeez. Of Republican voters right now are supporting Maybe Trump's more, immigration probably. Policy.
Oh, you're talking about the immigration. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, broadly, like, they do want this stuff.
No, ICE is very unpopular right now, but go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and this is where it gets us into, luckily, we've talked about this before, our desires don't matter. So what we desire is meaningless because we have no power and Donald Trump won and controls all of Washington. But just like from an outcome standpoint, like I just on this question of accelerationism, like consequences do need to happen, right? I mean, again, like let's just go back and I hate to compare our friends in the Bush administration to like what's happening here, but like their stupid decision, sorry, JVL, we argued about this already once, to go into Iraq, like led to real consequences eventually, right? Like that got pushed out because there were real consequences for real people in the country who went and served in Iraq and got injured or had family members, etc. And like eventually over time that mattered. And and the posture of the Republican leaders changed. But you know, like obviously like if Iraq had been more successful, fewer consequences, we might have boots on the ground in Venezuela right now or Iran. Who knows, right? Like it's not like some ideological commitment that Trump has. Like Trump's just wants to be a bully who does stuff that's popular. So his strategies need consequences, right? So I don't want to be here wanting like, oh, I hope that something terrible happens in Venezuela, but like I kind of hope something terrible happens in Venezuela, like because you know, or at least at minimum that none of this work. I like, you know, it doesn't seem like it's going to work, but that like the long term of oh, we won't get the oil out of the ground for 10 years, like that's not enough to slow this down. And I just think that like this guy is posting that he's a leader of Venezuela and he's got his eyes on Greenland and the domestic shit's out of control. You know, if there's nothing to stop, you know, there's like an inertia element to this. If there's nothing that stops him. Like, I do think that he's going to keep doing shit like this. Cuba, I don't know what else is on the chopping block.
I just want him to do it. I want him to do it and stop talking about it. right? This is why I feel like it's important to push, like, you know, well, look, if Greenland is important to America's national security, we should invade tomorrow.
Yeah, but, right? Okay, but like, the problem
why,
with that
why allow
is,
it
if,
to be?
But what if the, what I just laid out happens, which is that he does invade Greenland, puts America's flag down, and the EU is just, and the EU with tacos.
Well,
the EU is like, well, whatever.
Here's, I mean, I can tell you, I think what That's I possible. Believe is like the accepted, I think it's likely. But it wouldn't be a taco. So if you, the way this works, the way decoupling works is you decouple in secret and you sort of preserve the facade of the alliance remaining until the moment when you're ready to fully cut ties. And so what they would have to do is they'd have to, again, further increase defense spending and stand up their own defense industries. This is, again, why Ukraine will be really important, because Ukraine is going to exit this war with a pretty mammoth defense industrial complex. And so the Germans and the Swiss got to start making weapons, making small machine parts and stuff like that again. French nuclear program has to kick into gear. And so all that stuff, if we invade Greenland, I think Europe sends a very strongly worded letter and begins preparing to fully break with America. And decouple. And the reason they don't blow up the alliance is because there's no percentage for them. There's no advantage in like blowing up the alliance right there, right? You decide we're going to make all our future plans and you continue to take whatever benefits from the alliance you can while you have it. And also because, I don't know, like if some Democrat gets elected president and gets sworn into office, there's got to be a 50-50 chance that Greenland changes hands and goes back, right?
Well, if a Democrat gets elected after we've done it, we would give Greenland back.
Right. So this is why if you're Germany, you don't like fight a
it's
war.
It's one of the ways
it.
We make peace with the rest of the world. To say like, please forgive us. Here, we're going to give Greenland back.
And the world won't forgive us. The world will take Greenland back. Like, you know, they would, Denmark would take Greenland back. But the world can't ever trust us again because we've shown that we can do this now twice.
Do you know how many people are on Greenland?
50,000.
Yep. Do you know, though, that it is bigger? This was, I didn't know this. It is bigger than France, Britain, Spain, and like Germany all together.
Land
it's like the size of Alaska.
Land-wise, it's very big.
It's huge.
Yeah. It's part of the reason why Trump wants it. He saw it on the map. It looks big. but I mean, 50,000 people is like it's like Ball State University or something. Like, it's like not, it's not even a big college.
Yeah, he's it's, like he could give them each $100,000 bribe, and it would cost him $500,000. Not that much. Not a lot of money.
Right. $5 million. This is,
again, and even
$5 million.
That though
$5 million.
Doesn't
I knew that.
Quite work, right? So, like, how does Congress appropriate that that much money? You can't bind their actions, right? You could give it to these people, but you can't ensure they're actually going to hold their word. It becomes hard.
Okay, you know how sometimes you just stare into your fridge hoping something will magically cook itself? I do. Our next sponsor might be the answer to your prayers. This podcast is sponsored by Tovala. Tovala is a smart meal delivery service, fresh meals, and a smart oven that does the cooking for you. Tovala makes it so easy. You just scan the meal's QR code, pop it in the oven, and it cooks everything perfectly. Steams, bakes, broils automatically, no guesswork needed. During Tovala's New Year's sale, you can get a free Tovala smart oven when you order meals six or more times by heading to tovala.com/next level using our code next level. Tovala's meals are chef crafted and taste just like homemade meals you'd make for yourself, just without all the headache. Plus, all Tovala's meals are made with real fresh ingredients. And Tovala's smart oven isn't just for their meals. You can also use it to scan store-bought groceries like Eggo waffles, cinnamon rolls, Amy's frozen meals, and others. If you're trying to declutter your life this year, this is the perfect way to do it. Between parenting, podcasting, and keeping up with the news, it's hard to find room for much else these days. And if you're like me, meal prep doesn't need to be another one of those things stacking up on your to-do list. So for a limited time, because you're a next level listener, during Tovala's New Year sale, you can get a free Tovala smart oven when you order meals six or more times by heading to tovala.com/next level. Using my code next level. That's a free Tovala smart oven when you head to tovala.com/next level and use promo code next level. One last time, that's TOVALA.com. And make sure you use our promo code next level for a free Tovala smart oven. Remember, with Tovala, dinner is taken care of.
Representative Peltola, who beat Sarah Palin to become and ended Sarah Palin's political career again. God bless her for that. She's going to run for Senate, challenging incumbent Dan Sullivan,
who's still in the Senate, interestingly.
Still in the Senate. And her campaign seems to be family, fish, and freedom.
Love that.
Fish. Fish is first.
Is it fish first?
Fish, yeah. Family, freedom. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fish,
so
family,
not
freedom.
Not America first, not family first. Fish first.
Fish,
yeah,
first.
Yeah, which in Alaska, that plays.
But also, Sarah, she said America first in her ad, in her opening ad.
How much do you love this, Sarah? Because this is like your fantasy politics.
Yeah, right? I mean, do we got to hand it to Chuck Schumer a little bit? It's
no.
Possible. she's a good get. She's a good get for Alaska. And I got to say, for the first time, with Mary Paltola in Alaska, you now have a Senate map that is plausible that Democrats could win. And what I love about Mary Paltola is that she is all about her state. This is how Lisa Murkowski has won in Alaska, even with a last name like Murkowski, which, because her dad was a politician there, people didn't know how to spell. But like when she was had to be a write-in candidate, she could still win because people saw Lisa Murkowski, and I focus grouped Alaska a ton. They're like, they know which committees she sits on. They know how much power she has. Like, and they see her as somebody who fights for that state. And they see Mary Paltola that way also. And I think that she's got a really good shot at this Senate seat.
Yeah, and I think it relates to our Greenland thing. You know, I think running a campaign about how Donald Trump and Dan Sullivan care more about Greenland than Alaska is pretty compelling. Regardless of whether you got to hand it to Chuck Schumer, I think this is the first recruitment. It's the first Senate announcement where I'm like, oh, that's helpful. Actually helpful to the map. Not saying she's definitely going to win. I saw a poll today. I think had her either up one or down one. Alaska, polling Alaska is hard. Alaska politics is very finicky. Dan Sullivan, who has been like a ghost, maybe he is spending a lot of time in Anchorage and I don't want to pretend like I have huge visibility on what Dan Sullivan has been doing on the local side, and he's been a Trump toady, but he's not like out there saying embarrassing shit all the time, right? It's not like a Herschel Walker situation. So this is not celebration time, but it's a legit recruitment. It expands the map. We've been talking about this over and over again. For the Democrats to win the Senate, they got to go out there. And the states we've kept been saying is win two of Ohio, Iowa, Texas, Florida. And like now you can add Alaska to that. And I think another one to secretly watch is Kansas. Kansas did vote on that abortion ballot initiative on the pro-choice side. Kansas has some weird politics too. They had a Democratic governor. Roger Marshall, who's up there, is also one of these like MAGAs aren't excited about him. You know, suburban moms in the Kansas City burbs aren't excited about him, right? So conceivably there. And that's what they got to do. You know, they got to expand the map and take more shots. And you need candidates who are a little bit heterodox. Mary Paltola has been that. And so that's good.
But she also... Here's the thing about Mary Paltola that I love, and this is the part where Tim and I talk a lot about, like, you need candidates that fit the places. Yeah, the thing about Alaska is it's got this large native population that really matters, and it's also got all of these places that they call it the bush. It's like places that the broadband doesn't even reach, you know, like they're indigenous populations and just remote areas. She's a star in those places. Like, she has genuine star power. And the other thing about Alaska, even though I make fun of ranked choice voting all the time, it does have ranked choice voting. And so the independents, it's one of the reasons that Mary Paltola won against Sarah Palin, is that because of ranked choice voting and the number of independents in the state, it gives her a better shot. And, you know, the Republicans in Alaska often win. It's like 53%, 52%. You know, it's not like... It's not Alabama we're talking about here. Right. And so with a strong, if you play well with the independents, there's just like, and you have the ranked choice voting. I think it's a decent shot. Best news I'd gotten in a while.
If the map flips, just indulge me. Could Lisa Murkowski caucus with Democrats then in order to get more for her state? Give them another seat, increase the cushion.
I don't know the answer to that. I have been saying no to you on the fantasy politics of all this for a long time.
Just asking questions. I'm not saying it's going
to
happen.
I try to talk about like the lunch table problems, whatever. Murkowski has been not great. Like, I've been angrier at her than I have ever been of late. She is one of the people, though, that is making noise right now, both about the Fed and about Greenland and about ICE. Like, she's, I don't know if you'd ever get her to flip, but she should. Let me just be really clear. She should.
One piece of interesting fantasy politics, if we're going to play that game, is that, forget the cushion, like, it's not totally crazy for the Dems to pick up the two seats that are in states that Democrats have won, which is North Carolina and Maine, though they're making some problems for themselves in Maine.
They are.
And then pick up only Peltola. And so it's 50-50. And Lisa Murkowski has a Democrat as her, you know, colleague.
Who she likes, Alaska, by the way.
Who she likes. Now that would be a fun fantasy politics scenario to see how old Lisa would handle that.
Last thing. Senate in Texas. Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang got in all sorts of trouble. Bowen Yang, who's just left Saturday Night Live, makes me very sad. I like him. He's funny.
You do? That's interesting. I think
Bowen's great. You don't like Bowen Yang?
I don't really have anything. I wonder who's Bowen Yang is for. I've wondered that before. And it's interesting that as a straight man with a family of four, you like his material. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay, that's interesting. Yeah, I just don't know what his demos are. It's interesting that you'd be in there.
I also find him funny.
Yeah. No, he's great.
He's in the
They said on
movies.
The show that Jasmine Crockett doesn't have a chance of winning the Senate race in Texas. And so people should
fact check true.
Shouldn't give money to her campaign. And I think that those remarks were not appreciated.
The response these guys got is insane. It's truly crazy.
Tell me more.
I shared one example on Twitter of someone I just saw this in my own TikTok feed. I'm just scrolling. I'm not nut hunting. Came across this video. It has 170,000 likes. And the video starts by talking about how these twinks with their gaping rosebuds should not be talking like this about a black woman. It did catch my ear because, generally speaking, if you're concerned that someone's been speaking in a bigoted or offensive manner about a group of marginalized people, you don't begin that by disparaging them in an extremely disgusting and bigoted way. My objection to that apparently didn't resonate with everybody else since it had 170,000 likes on TikTok. That's just one example. This is not nutpicking. I don't really know him. I messaged Matt just because Bowen and Matt end up not apologizing, but just kind of putting out one of those statements. It's like, we've heard the feedback from our listeners and we take it seriously. One of those kind of
responses. I thought they did walk it back a little bit.
They did, but that was the statement. It was like, we've heard the feedback, you know, we're taking it seriously. I don't have the statement in front of me, but it just notably didn't say, I'm sorry, is all I'm saying. But like, it was definitely a walk back for sure. And I just messaged him on Instagram. I was just like, don't get bullied over this.
Yeah.
And his response to me was I guess I shouldn't share the private conversation, but just the gist of it is like, you wouldn't believe how overwhelming, like he was in it. They were inundated. They're inundated with people just really maligning them. I've seen people on social media calling others who defended them like KKK and things of this nature. The left is never going to win an election again if they behave like this, you know, and reduce everybody to their identity and make extremely disgusting and disparaging remarks about each other based on identity. And it's like, I'll wait and see how Jasmine Crockett's campaign is going. We've talked about Jasmine Crockett's campaign before. I have some questions about it. There are things that she's good at, but like, they're, you know, it's like, it's great to be like Bowen Yang and Matt Rogers are against black women. Like, they're huge cheerleaders of Kamala Harris's campaign, and there are great candidates of all races and genders, and there are bad candidates of all races and genders. And like, reducing somebody to that and doing these nasty online attacks on people within the left is I mean, it's like nobody actually takes the threat of the opposition seriously if they're going to do this, if this is going to be the dialogue. And it's, I just think it's truly insane and that it is important. I wanted it to be on the rundown today because it's important for people to speak out to try to encourage people to stop it and to change their behavior. Because we're going to get into a 28 campaign where people are going to do this. And it's like the Democrats have dug their own grave too many times by being like, oh, I've got to be, I can't criticize this person or this thing or this bad actor because these people are going to do, are going to weaponize bad faith attacks against me and call me a white supremacist or something. So I can't, I can't criticize Joe Biden because people are going to say, oh, you know, you're ageist or whatever. I can't criticize Kamala. Like this is all, it's all insane. Like people put themselves in the public eye, are allowed to be criticized on the merits. If people say racist things, you should call them out as that. But that's not what happened here. Matt and Bowen are allowed to have an opinion about who is viable and not without like being called white supremacists.
Also, can I just say that as a matter of strategic judgment, they're correct. Like their point was there are these progressive candidates that run in places where they very likely can't win, who raise truckloads of dollars from sort of not so smart activist types who are like, I love this person because they're, you know, a flamethrower and they're taking on Trump. And you're like, okay, but Mary Peltola can win that Senate seat in Alaska. And yeah. Jasmine Crockett can't win that Senate seat in Texas. And so there are a finite number of resources. And when the left get, and look, there are people that I like very much. Amy McGrath is a really good example. I like Amy McGrath, okay? But Amy McGrath wasn't going to win against Mitch McConnell. She just wasn't. And like the amount of money she raised for the guy.
Was it like $50 million or something?
I mean, it was just, it was incredible, yeah. Incredible. And, you know, the same thing happened. There was a guy named Marcus Flowers. I remember he ran against Marjorie Taylor Greene. Just buckets and buckets of money in a race that was totally not viable. And I think that it is actually part of what bothered me about the Bowen Yang thing is having people like them, celebrities, taking like the finally getting their handle on like the right strategic side of what makes sense to invest in. If you're giving like lots of people are listening to them and for them to get yanked over something that is just like good political allocation of resources was absurd. And it shows you that part of the Democratic coalition that is less interested in winning and more interested in being able to like yell at and then change the behavior of the people in their sphere. That way lies ruin for Democrats.
Oh, they're interested in winning. They're interested in winning the social media fight.
Yeah. Okay. Well, congrats on all your social media points. I mean? It gets you nothing in checking Trump.
This is how Barry Weiss was born, right? I mean, sure, ICE agents are murdering people in Minneapolis, but over on TikTok and Instagram, people are overreacting to this statement. And so I've never felt more politically homeless.
But, and by the way, also, there are healthy ways to do this. If you're one of these people that are watching this and you're like, Sarah's analysis is dead wrong. Jasmine Crockett does have a chance to win. I love Jasmine Crockett. We should try that. Then go donate to Jasmine Crockett. And it's fine for somebody to do a TikTok also, that's like, you know what? Here's a sizzle reel of here's a sizzle reel of Jasmine Crockett. Like, I watched this podcast and these guys said don't donate to him. But here's why I think you should, because she's really great on this side or the other.
Make the
case. That's fine. Go do that. Yeah, make the case.
Make the case.
Like, smearing these people and like these personal attacks, intra coalition is just and bullying them and being nasty and being fucking homophobic about it. Like, it's just don't stop. Okay. And focus. If you're gonna insult somebody, insult little Greg Bovino, okay, and Stephen Miller, and people that actually fucking deserve it.
If Representative Crockett can win, then she's gonna win, and this isn't gonna be what stops her from winning, right? It won't be a lack of resources. I promise you, it won't be a lack of resources if she doesn't win.
That might be true, but also there's a primary right now,
right?
And like, I'm not saying James Talrico actually has the best chance either. But he's got a better chance than she does because you have to win Trump voters in a state like Texas. And guess what? She called the governor Hot Wheels and she has made hating Trump like at the center of her thing, which, by the way, that is good. That
me
is
too.
Fine.
And
that's
I'm not
cool.
running for Senate in Louisiana. But like, by the way, you can fucking tell me, like, I do that too. And people said you should run Louisiana. I can't win in Louisiana because I live in fucking Louisiana and because I've been so nasty to MAGA Republicans and because there are a lot of MAGA Republicans here. That's just life, baby. Yeah.
For reals. All right. Before we get out of here, Tim, you had something you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, I just, while we're talking about these attacks on marginalized groups, you know, and being sensitive to that, I do think it's important to talk about one group that people haven't really focused on a lot and the challenges they have, and that's WASPs. And Tucker Very Carlson was on a podcast with his brother Buckley, Tucker and Buckley, and Buckley brought up our colleague Bill Kristol and how he thinks Bill Kristol is stupid, and Tucker corrected him and was like, Buckley, no. Bill Kristol went to a great prep school and a great college. He's done a lot of reading, and he's not stupid. But he does have a problem, and that's something that I remember from when I worked with him, and that's that he just doesn't like WASPs. And that Bill Kristol brought it up a lot to me that I was a WASP, and I remember him thinking about how I was a WASP a lot. And Tucker was like, "Now I didn't think very much about how he's Jewish. I don't ever think about how people are Jewish. I bring up the Jews all the time, but I wasn't thinking about that. But I did notice that he often thinks about how I'm a WASP, and I just wanted to say, heard, you know." WASPs are people too, okay? And if at the Weekly Standard, you know, Fred Barnes and who else? What other WASPs did you have up there?
William F. Buckley?
No, he was at the National
Review. Not at the Weekly Standard. Oh, okay. Also, he was Catholic.
Who else? Yeah. What other WASPs? What other WASPs do you have over there, JBL? If they felt uncomfortable.
Catholics are not Protestants. We're barely even Christians. Sorry. That's a little inside Catholic humor for you folks.
Anyway, Tucker was mad. Bill is anti-WASP. I haven't seen any of that. In our office, WASP.
If only we had a firsthand witness who was around all that time and could speak to this.
Do you remember any WASP? Do you remember any anti-WASP?
No, who could say? Who could say?
Are there slurs? Are there anti-WASP slurs? Like buzzheads?
No, you know what this is. We all know Bill. Bill walks around my office over here in his Bombas, because he's taking his shoes off, and he's walking around, and he gets behind the kids' computers, and he's like, hey, see, you're not working.
Working hard here. Yeah. Oh, good. Time for another lunch break. Nothing getting undone here at the Bulwark.
You know what he was doing is he was making fun of Tucker's bow tie. Like, he was making fun of his goofy clothes. I mean, I know Tucker's had a big makeover now where he only wears flannel shirts and, like, has a zin in his mouth. But for most of the time we knew him, he had a bow tie and, like, floppy hair. And that's just what Bill does. Tucker did defend Bill's intelligence. But it was this, like, his, like, thing where Bill was anti-WASP. He did say Bill's intelligence was like a party trick. Like it wasn't like real deep. As somebody who spent a lot of time with Bill, it is, I think, not a party trick. You got to listen to him talk about the opera and about Thucydides and, you know, history of the Peloponnesian War.
Yeah, Rousseau.
He's read all of Marx.
Well, I just wanted to say clearly, I have an eye out for this. At the Bulwark, all WASPs are welcome.
Yeah, all WASPs are welcome here. Bill's low-key was something of a young math prodigy too. So like it's not just that he's better read than almost anybody else I know. Like he does math too. It's nuts. It's
unfair. WASP lives matter.
He would have known what happens if you give 50,000 people in Greenland $100,000 a piece. He would know what that answer is.
I just skipped right over it. All right, guys. Well, not bad. We got through another one. Another great week show down. Good show. Long show. Guys, we'll see you next week. Good luck, America.